everyone. This is Jeb Sharp with How We Got Here. How We Got Here explores the history behind the news. It comes to you from PRI's The World, a public radio program about all things global. It's co-produced by the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. We are online at theworld.org, and you can find all our podcast offerings at theworld.org/podcasts. We've been exploring some of the background to the uprisings in North Africa and the Middle East on How We Got Here, and we will continue to do so. But on this episode, I'd like to return to Haiti, and specifically to a bit of a look at the life and times of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. After last year's earthquake, we did a couple of history podcasts, one on the Haitian Revolution and another on 19th and 20th century Haitian history. I actually went to Haiti for the first time this past January, 2011, 1 year after the earthquake, and that got me interested in contemporary Haitian politics as well. Runoff presidential elections are scheduled for March 20th after months of uncertainty following the November elections, which were marred by allegations of fraud. And then to add fuel to the fire, former dictator Jean-Claude Duvalier suddenly returned home after decades in exile. And ever since he returned, there's been anticipation that former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide would return as well. Aristide's supporters have been marching to demand his return, in fact, but the U.S. and Haitian governments have made it clear they would like him to wait until after the March elections to reappear on the scene. Aristide is still very popular in Haiti, but he is also a polarizing figure, and there's fear that his return would be destabilizing, that it could ignite a political storm that would derail the next round of voting. The anxiety around Aristide's possible return got me wondering about the man. His record is rather confounding if you haven't followed Haitian politics closely over the years, and I wanted to understand more about his life, what he represents, why he's so popular, and what factors led to his downfall and exile not just once, but twice. First in 1991 and again in 2004. So I turn to political scientist Robert Faton. He's a professor of politics at the University of Virginia. And Faton told me that when you're trying to assess Aristide's life and career, it really depends which period you're talking about.
In the late 1980s and up to his return to Haiti in 94, I think Aristide symbolized the aspirations of the vast majority of Haitians, of the left in Haiti and of progressives in Haiti. So he was a very important figure because he concentrated unto himself the desire for change in the country and rather radical change. And he symbolized the fight against Duvalier. So at that juncture, let's say the late 80s up to 1994, 1995, I think Aristide was without doubt the embodiment of 80% of the Haitian population. Afterwards, things started to get very complicated because the movement that put him to power started to break up in 94, 95, and Aristide ultimately alienated many of the intellectuals that had supported his candidacy in 1990. And eventually that break, I think, fractured the progressive movement in the country, and the movement became increasingly populist without a clear program. I think this is where people start to have very different opinions about Aristide. On the one hand, there are people up to now who are convinced that Aristide is the only person who could change Haiti. And on the other hand, there is a significant number of Haitians also who look at Aristide as a demagogue, as a populist force who didn't create really anything that could continue without his charismatic presence. And then the very conservative forces look at Aristide in terms of a demon. But that started way back in the 1980s. The elite in Haiti never stomached Aristide. And this is why you had the coup and the violence against his supporters in the early 1990s. And when he came back to the presidency in 2000, that antagonism was still virulent. And now it is very clear that the elite don't want to see him back in the country and that the international community doesn't want to see him back in the country. So you have different periods of Aristide, a period where he symbolized, as I've said, the opposition to dictatorship, to Duvalier, to what was then called Makoutism, that is to say the type of repressive police force that the Duvalier regime had created. And he was at that time also a priest and very much associated with what was called Tileglise, the small church, that is to say the prophetic wing of the Catholic Church, with its emphasis on the so-called preferential option for the poor, so liberation theology. That was Aristide, the heroic figure, as it were. And then things started to degenerate. Personally, I think that the tragedy of Aristide and of the Lavalas movement is that at one point they had a historic opportunity to change the country and change it utterly, but that chance ultimately was not seized, not only because of internal conditions, but also because of external conditions. So I think Aristide will remain a controversial figure, and depending on how you look at the different periods and whether you are on the progressive wing, as it were, of Haitian politics or a more conservative wing, you will have very different interpretations and visions of Aristide and what he still means for the country.
When you talk about how he ultimately alienated the intellectuals, what was it? That what sort of process or what sort of events, what did lead to the disillusionment?
There are several things. In the first place, I think the intellectuals, to be very blunt, thought that Aristide would be their man and that their plan would be effected through Aristide. And Aristide ultimately proved that it was going to be the opposite, that he was going to be the central figure, and that the intellectuals eventually were dispensable. So you have that thing that played itself out in the course of the 90s. The second thing is a question of personalities. And it should not have come ultimately as a surprise, because Aristide has always talked about movement and not structure. Whereas the intellectuals looked at it in much more in how do you create a political party? How do you create structures? How do you create institutions? Aristide really didn't like that. Aristide was the movement, the people, and that kind of populistic appeal to the people without a clear program. And that generated tensions between Aristide and the intellectuals. And in addition, what happened is that many of the intellectuals started to be very disillusioned with some of the compromises that Aristide had to make to return to power in 1994. And then the personalistic tensions between some of the intellectuals and Aristide pushed, as it were, the envelope, and we had the beginning of a break where the movement that came to power with Aristide fragmented between the Lavalas movement of Aristide himself and a series of other political parties. So you had personalistic differences, programmatic differences, and the fact that people assumed on the part of the intellectual that Aristide really wanted to monopolize political space and monopolize it completely for his own persona. In other words, being the charismatic leader who would bypass structures, bypass political parties. And so you have, that is the beginning of the end of that kind of union that marked the ascendancy of Aristide and his election in 1990 So the divisions eventually became very intense, and fuel was added to that soup, if you wish, insofar as the international community became increasingly hostile to Aristide.
And the demonizing of him by conservatives that you said went on throughout, how did that manifest itself, and how did that end up affecting his future, his prospect, the whole narrative?
Well, the demonization of Aristide starts even before he assumes the presidency. Aristide is elected in 1990, in December of 1990, and there is an attempted coup by Roger Lafontaine, who was in fact a macout. The coup fails, but that's the beginning of the tension between Aristide and the conservative elite and the old Duvalierist forces. The other thing that really exacerbates the relations between Aristide and those forces is the fact that Aristide talks very bluntly about classes, about class struggle, and about the fact that the country is really being run by an oligarchy, and that that oligarchy really now has to surrender. And not surprisingly, the conservative forces did not swallow that message at all, and they didn't want to hear about class struggles. They didn't want to hear about class conflicts. And the triggering factor that pushed that tension to a boil was really when Aristide first started to make changes in the army, and in a very famous speech essentially gave an ultimatum to the bourgeoisie that they had to change their ways or else. And that precipitated the coup. So you had a very polarized political situation in terms of the rhetoric of Aristide and the feeling on the part of the conservative forces that Aristide could not stay in power, because if he stayed, then they would be eclipsed. And not surprisingly, you have the coup of September 1991, 7 months after Aristide becomes president. And that coup exacerbates even further the tension between the Lavalas movement, Aristide, and the conservative forces, because the army was extremely repressive. You have thousands of people who were jailed, killed during the exile of Mr. Aristide. So that further aggravated the tensions. When Aristide comes back in 1994, he starts to change to some extent his discourse, but there is absolutely no trust between the conservative bourgeoisie, if you wish to call it that way, and Aristide. They accept the return of Aristide because they have no other choice. One has to remember that Aristide comes back with 20,000 Marines who are sent by President Clinton. Otherwise, Aristide would have clearly remained in exile. So you have a relationship that, to begin with, is very bad, and that gets worse with the passage of time.
Why, I mean, from your point of view, why did the United States invest so heavily at that moment in restoring Aristide?
Well, you have to be back at in the early 1990s. This is the moment in history where there is a wave of democratization. This is a moment where the Organization of American States has the so-called Santiago Declaration, whereby any elected government has to be preserved. This is the moment also when you have the ascendancy of the liberal discourse about human rights, about electoral power, etc. And here you have Aristide, who was elected on a landslide and removed in a vicious, repressive, brutal military coup. So the United States, while participated, some of the institutions in the United States clearly knew about the coup and probably participated in the coup, the CIA and the Defense Department, but it was something that was not legitimate. And Aristide played a very clever role He went first to Venezuela, then came to the United States, generated support in the United States, in particular among the Black caucus in Congress, and that put pressure on President Clinton. And the diaspora, the Haitian diaspora in the United States and elsewhere, was to a large extent united in demanding the return of the elected president. So that was the context within which President Clinton had to make his decision. But in order to make the decision, Clinton extracted from Mr. Aristide a series of concessions. In other words, the economic plan of Mr. Aristide was a plan that was the traditional World Bank IMF plan. So Aristide, when he came back, is to some extent no longer the same individual. He no longer has the capacity to push for a much more progressive agenda. So Aristide comes back, and the earlier plans, which were quite clearly more progressive, vanish. So much so that eventually Aristide opposes the very plans that he had signed for. So you have a peculiar transition. So you have the general mood in the world, the pressure from the Black caucus in the United States, and Mr. Clinton, I think, felt quite clearly that this was a situation that was not going to continue for long. He needed the support of the Black caucus. There were elections coming. And there was a fear, too, on the part, I think, of the Clinton administration that there might be a massive exodus of boat people from Haiti to Florida, and that, in turn, would have had a very adverse impact on the elections in that critical state of Florida. So it's a multiplicity of factors. And the fact, I think, too, that Mr. Clinton had some affinity with Haiti, and he could not really stomach the presence of such brutal dictators in power in Port-au-Prince.
So then that period after Aristide's been reinstated, he's reinstated, well, but then he's barred from a second term, so he leaves.
Yeah, well, he's not necessarily barred from the second, because this is a constitutional provision. The thing that Aristide wanted, though, was to have the 3 years that he spent in exile added to his mandate. But the international community resisted that, and the Haitians, too, resisted that. So eventually what happens is that René Préval, the current president of Haiti, is elected. He's elected in 1996. Aristide leaves the presidential palace, and Préval becomes the new president. The problem for Préval is that Préval, while he's president, he doesn't have much power. Power, as people said in Haiti, is in Tabar. And Tabar is the place where the residence of Mr. Aristide is located. So you had kind of a very peculiar situation where René Préval attempted to implement the very programs that Aristide had to agree with in order to come back. And yet, once Aristide is out of power, Aristide opposes those programs, and he blocks to a large extent the implementation of many of those economic policies that were essentially liberalizing the economy, etc. So Préval finds himself in a position where he has the legal mandate of a president, but is really eclipsed nonetheless by the overwhelming presence on the political scene of Aristide. And that complicates matters for Préval. He can't govern. The country is really in a state of paralysis in those 5 years of Préval. There were 2 years without a prime minister because it was virtually impossible to get agreement on who was going to be the prime minister. So you have a state of paralysis. This is the beginning also of some violence in Haiti, in particular in the slums. And it is the beginning of a climate of insecurity that will be even more pronounced in the years of the second presidency of Mr. Aristide.
And then he gets back in again. And as I sort of, I don't remember it well, but it just seems to deteriorate even further. Is that fair?
Yes. The thing is, the elections of 2000 are very controversial. The opposition boycotts essentially the presidential elections. They have some sort of a challenge in the legislative elections. And there is a real problem with 7 Senate seats that supposedly should not have gone to the Lavalas movement of Mr. Aristide. And that election and the problem of those 7 seats that should not have gone to Mr. Aristide generate tension between the opposition in Haiti and Aristide when he comes back to the presidency. And at the same time, you have a change also of administration in the United States. You have the Bush administration that comes to power. And that is also very significant insofar as there is very strong opposition on the part of the U.S. vis-a-vis the regime of Aristide. The regime of Aristide is seen in the United States as too radical, too populistic, and ultimately incapable of governing the country. And the U.S. allies itself very much with the traditional forces in Haiti who are going to generate opposition, an increasingly large opposition to Aristide. For the first 2 years, that opposition was manageable. But then the effect of economic sanctions on Haiti, the effect also of growing corruption in the Aristide regime, and the fact that you have the beginning of serious gang violence in the slums of Port-au-Prince, and some say that that violence was instigated by the Lavalas movement itself, the so-called Chimère, that generates a climate where opposition to Aristide grows. It's not just the elite. You have the beleaguered middle classes and lower middle classes that join the movement, and then you have students who ultimately join the movement. And finally, you have what ultimately leads to the fall of Aristide is the coming together of paramilitary groups who invade Haiti from the Dominican Republic, take some major cities, and the climate in Port-au-Prince deteriorates significantly. And eventually the U.S., the French and the Canadian, abandon Mr. Aristide, and Aristide is really presented with the option of staying in the country without any security forces or exiting the country. And ultimately, Aristide decides that he will exit. Aristide portrays those events as a kidnapping, but from my perspective, I don't think it was a kidnapping. I think it was more the great powers telling to Mr. Aristide, well, your security is no longer going to be with you, so you stay in the country and you have no protection whatsoever, or else you exit. And I think he chose the latter because it was unlikely that he could have survived without the security that had been provided actually by the United States.
Did the U.S. and France and Canada share the concerns about the election? I mean, was there a sense of...
Yeah, well, the elections were perceived by the United States and the French as problematic, in particular those 7 seats. But I think that was taken as an excuse because there was real opposition to Aristide on the part of those governments. They simply did not like the fellow. And the French were clearly very angry at Mr. Aristide. Mr. Aristide, for about 2 or 3 years in his second term, was calling for restoration. And restoration was essentially calling the French to return the money that they had forced the Haitian government in the 1820s to pay for declaring their independence from France. So Mr. Aristide had a very significant campaign targeting the French that they should repay for the harm caused to the Haitian government as a result of the debt that the Haitian government had to incur to pay the French. So that played a very popular, played very popularly in Haiti, insofar as Haitians really felt that the independence of the country meant, if anything, that the French should pay reparations and not the reverse. And that's exactly what happened in the 1820s, that the French compelled Haitians to pay for their own victory over the French in 1804. President Aristide called for $22 billion, essentially, that should be given back to Haiti from the French. And the French didn't like it. They didn't like it at all. And I think that exacerbated relations between Aristide and the French government. And one may also recall that just a few days before Aristide was forced to exit the country, Colin Powell, the then Secretary of State, had said very publicly that the paramilitary groups that were attempting to overthrow Mr. Aristide were a bunch of thugs, and that they would never allow those thugs to take power. And then a few days afterwards, the then Foreign Minister of France, de Villepin, said, well, the problem is not those thugs. The problems are the French. The problem is Mr. Aristide. And very quickly, in a matter of a few days, the U.S. moved to the position of the French and eventually said that Mr. Aristide was the problem and therefore that any solution would require his departure. And that's exactly what happened. So I think it's a combination of personal animosity, a feeling also that Aristide was too radical in terms of his rhetoric, and that he generated more instability than stability in the country. So you have a combination of factors that really lead to a very significant exacerbation of relations between the foreign community and Mr. Aristide. But that started in the second term, the last year of the second term of Mr. Aristide, and it really peaked during the second term.
It's such a remarkable reversal of sort of policy and tone. Is there an explanation for what actually changed that would make the outside world see Haiti and it and the person governing it so differently in those years?
It's difficult to tell. I think it was something that was happening gradually in terms of the alienation that we see between Aristide and the foreign community. You have a change of government in the United States, and that also means that the U.S. doesn't look at Aristide in the same way. I mean, the coup of 1990... is a coup that was, to a large extent, well-known among people in the CIA and in the Defense Department. And those are the very people who eventually come back to power in 2000. They didn't like Aristide the first time, and they clearly disliked him even more the second time, because he represented everything that they didn't stomach, to put it bluntly. You have very conservative people in the State Department, Otto Reich and Roger Noriega, who clearly see Mr. Aristide as the problem from the very beginning. So the U.S. Was really opposed to Aristide from the beginning. And Aristide offered them, to some extent, the possibility of using the electoral fraud in the election of 2000 for the legislative election, to use that to really isolate Aristide, cut foreign assistance, and ultimately present Mr. Aristide as the problem. Now, clearly, there were other factors involved within Haiti itself. The situation in Haiti deteriorated, the security climate deteriorated, and the economy, not surprisingly, deteriorated precisely because foreign assistance was not forthcoming. So Aristide, in his second term, was someone who was really besieged, on the one hand, by the international community, in the second place, by his own conservative forces in Haiti. And finally, people, even poor people, were no longer so, taken by Mr. Aristide himself. And he lost in the process even some very progressive forces. People who were allied to Aristide became some of his main enemies. And that has to do with the type of government that Aristide had in the second term, increasingly tied with some fairly corrupt individuals. And that, I think, really created the kind of suspicious feeling on the part of many of the intellectuals who no longer were seeing Aristide as a solution, but were seeing Aristide very much as the typical Haitian political figure who assumes that he embodies the aspirations of everyone, but ultimately is very self-serving. And I think that was the conclusion of many people in the progressive movement and also on the left in Haiti, let alone the conservative forces who had always, as I've said, demonized Aristide as a figure that had to be absolutely opposed.
So what do you think? I mean, do you think that he changed over time?
I think he lost an opportunity to really move the country, in particular in his first term. And he changed, and he changed dramatically, I think, in his second term. But one of the issues where he still remained the same was that he was someone who never believed in the creation of structures. He was a man who wanted movement. If you look, for instance, at his Lavalas party, to a large degree, it's not a party. It's really a movement, and a movement that cannot really persist if Aristide is not around. And that was one of the problems. You cannot change Haiti just by creating a movement. You need to create structures. You need to create institutions that are going to be self-sustaining and that will push the country in a very different direction. As we saw in the 1990s and up to now, those institutions are lacking. You may have popular support, and I still think that Aristide is probably the most popular political figure in Haiti right now. But that is not enough. Popularity does not necessarily translate into changes. So he had to deal with that particular problem that was his problem. Then he had to deal with the unmitigated opposition of the Haitian elite, the Haitian army, in his first term. And finally, he had to deal with the opposition of the key international actors, the U.S. and the French, and also Canada in his second term. So you have a multiplicity of factors that conspired against Aristide. Personal factors, external factors, and domestic structural factors. But I still think that he could have moved the country in a different direction if he had been kind of a different individual in terms of not using the kind of rhetoric that he used that might have pleased his supporters but was counterproductive because it really alienated the dominant forces in the country as well as externally. So you have that tension. But Mr. Aristide was also a man full of contradictions. You see, when Aristide was elected, he was always talking about U.S. imperialism. He was talking about French imperialism. And yet, when he returns to Haiti in 1994, he returns to Haiti on the back of 20,000 Marines. So there is here a fundamental contradiction. Very difficult to sustain the image of some sort of left-wing, anti-imperialist, populist figure. And then he returned because President Clinton the so-called imperialist is putting you back to power. And that is something that he never was able to deal with, I think. And he had to make compromises that undermine his earlier programs. And the very fact, too, that this is something that we didn't talk about much, but Aristide was a priest, and when he comes back, he obviously leaves the priesthood, and he gets married. And that may also have been a change in terms of his own personality, that his passage in Venezuela and in Washington had significant personal consequences in terms of how he saw himself and his transformation as a human being as such. But those are questions that ultimately only Mr. Aristide could answer. This is sheer speculation.
Have you met him?
No, I've never met him. I know a lot of people who obviously work with him, supported him, and most of them now opposed to him. A few are still very much supporters of him. So he's a very controversial figure, and he clearly generates now either sheer adoration or very strong feelings of antagonism.
What if he does come back?
Well, I think he's going to come back. The question is when. And I think that people had assumed that he would be back already, but it appears that the international community, the U.S., the French, and the Canadian, do not want to see Aristide in the country before the organization of the second round of the elections. And that second round is going to take place on March 20th. So it's unlikely at the moment that we will see Aristide's immediate return. On the other hand, the supporters of Aristide are saying that Aristide has to come back before March 20th. My personal feeling is that neither the current Haitian government nor the international community want to see him at the moment. So therefore, it's unlikely that he will be able to depart from South Africa before we have a new president in Haiti. And as I've said, the elections are March 20th. So if he comes back, it looks like now that it's going to be after that election. But I seriously doubt that they could keep Aristide out for a long time. One has to remember that Jean-Claude Duvalier returned to the country. And not surprisingly, supporters of Aristide are asking a very simple question. If Jean-Claude Duvalier can be back, why shouldn't Aristide be back in Port-au-Prince? And this is a very logical question. He has the passport, and the Haitian government has said that he can come back whenever. But I think that is somewhat disingenuous because very clearly, the U.S. has said not now, perhaps after the elections. And if those elections are conducted properly and if you have a new president, then perhaps he will be back soon afterwards, although the two presidential candidates represent, to a large extent, anti-Lavalas forces. So maybe it will be not that easy, ultimately, for Mr. Aristide to come back. But my gut feeling is that we will see him not necessarily immediately, but in the not-too-distant future in the country.
That's Robert Fatton, professor of politics at the University of Virginia. Thank you for walking us through some of the chapters in Aristide's career and some of the dynamics both inside and outside Haiti that contributed to his downfall and exile. I'll post some links on Haiti at the How We Got Here page. That's theworld.org/history. I'll include some of our reporting from there, the two history podcasts I did last year on Haiti, and some of the books I've found helpful in learning about the country. And as always, you can post your own suggestions, also your comments, thoughts, questions, at that page as well. Again, it's theworld.org/history. If you prefer, you could post them at the How We Got Here Facebook group page. You can also email directly. The address is howwegothere@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter. The address is at Jeb Sharp. And I wanted to make a correction from last week's podcast. I said Dirk Vandewalle's book on Libya was called The Modern History of Libya. It is, in fact, The History of Modern Libya, a slight but important distinction. So I'm sorry about that. Please help me catch any other mistakes you hear on the pod. I will be forever grateful. I think that's it for now. Thanks as ever for listening, and I'll speak to you soon.